showtime.
We're back with another episode of your Lakers Nation podcast. Jabari Davis, Jameson Welsh, and Jordan Buscarini here with you once again, of course. Plenty to discuss this week, including the sudden resurgence of Kobe Bryant, and of course, whether we need to be concerned over that shoulder flaring up, or if it's really somewhat to be expected given the history. I'll also ask these guys about some recent comments, and I guess you could call it a back and forth that has been taking place between Coach Scott and the young guys. But let's actually go ahead and jump into today's discussion with a few recent quotes by Lakers general manager Mitch Kupchak about what he hopes to see from this team. And, of course, I recommend, you know, checking out the story, you know, on LakersNation.com. It's titled Mitch Kupchak Hoping Young Core Can Attract Free Agents. It's up there, you know, from late in the week last week by Dan Duongdao. But basically the quotes go, "We have to develop our core players. When you're recruiting a veteran free agent that may have to take less money to come to your city, they want to know what they're going to play with." So my question is this. You know, if you're Mitch Kupchak, and obviously the front office is specifically stating that developing the young core, you know, is the primary target, and we'll get to whether or not, you know, that should be their tactic, you know, like kind of putting all their eggs in one basket in terms of, you know, luring in free agents anyhow. We'll get to whether that's a smart tactic. But if that's the case, and that, you know, like, and that's what they want to see, why, what are we still doing as a team limiting Randle's play?
It doesn't make sense. That's why there's a disconnect. If there's a disconnect between the front office and management and the staff on the bench, then the staff on the bench needs to be let go of their duties, be relieved of their duties, because the key thing for this team is this. All those young guys need to be playing as much as possible this year. Who knows what's going to happen next year? No one knows what's going to happen over summer, so let's not speculate. Let's not even go into that. But for what we know now, well, what we, you know, what we've seen thus far, these young guys need to be playing 30 to 35 minutes a night to just say, this is what they got. Let them go through their lumps now. Also, a guy, Anthony Brown, who's in the D League most of this year, who played a little bit on Saturday, or a lot of it Saturday. You know, I'll put it this way. My biggest thing is this. When it comes down to it, young guys need to play. The older guys, they're good for mentorship and roles like that. But older guys like Brandon Bass, Lou Williams, those guys, they don't need to be playing the majority of the minutes. They don't really need to be doing that. The young guys need to be playing as much as possible, get their lumps out the way now, let them get a feel for the league. Like you mentioned, D'Angelo Russell earlier in the year was saying that, you know, when he first got benched, that he was just trying to find out, you know, trying to feel the league. So that was the thing. So now he finally figures that out, and they bench him. It doesn't make sense. So now you're messing with guys on the court, both physically and mentally. I'm not a big fan of it at all. It has to get straightened out. But if there's a disconnect between the front office and the you know, the staff on the bench, then we have bigger problems here.
You know, hey, Jordan, to Jameson's point that you just made, and that's an excellent point. Why are we still playing Russell off the ball and in the same backcourt as Huertas instead of actually trying to push him into developing as a playmaker at this level? You know, obviously the court vision is there, but there are clear signs that he still struggles against the pressure of guys like Patrick Beverley or the type of defensive players that can really get into you. Why, you know, why in your opinion is that still taking place? I don't get it for the life of me.
No, I mean, there definitely is a disconnect between the front office, at least. There's definitely a disconnect between what we as fans and we as media members want to see happen compared to what is happening right now. I do believe that there is a disconnect between the front office and what's happening on the bench. But one thing that we have to remember, regardless of what they are saying, it is a quiet tank season, okay? And that, you know, for utmost, foremost, that has to be taken into consideration. This is without a question, a quiet tank season going on right now. You still want to see your development, and it's also a good idea at this point in time to play around with some things and just see what you're getting, what you can get out of some of your young players in certain situations. It's almost like, as crazy as it sounds, a lot of the time I feel like I'm watching a scrimmage game. I feel like I'm watching a glorified scrimmage game, a glorified practice session, five-on-five drills is what it feels like I'm watching sometimes while I'm watching this team. Now, there are a lot of questions that don't quite make sense. We've talked about, you know, should you make a coaching change? Well, why at this point in time? I mean, we're over a quarter of the way through the season, and there's still some things going on that I don't quite understand. As far as Brandon Bass, Lou Williams, and guys like that go, well, Lou Williams is still young enough in a sense to where he could fit into this team moving forward. He's got a very friendly contract as well with this team, so I'm not too upset watching Lou Williams play. Brandon Bass, on the other hand, yeah, I mean, at this point, do I want Brandon Bass taken away minutes from Julius Randle? No, not necessarily. But again, I understand that it's the nature of the beast, and I definitely don't want to see Julius Randle out playing 40 minutes of contest. I don't think that's good for anybody involved, including Julius Randle. It's frustrating because they're not winning. It's also frustrating because we all know deep down they don't want to win. And that's something that's very hard to embrace. And we've seen teams around the league go through this for years. And again, the way the current collective bargaining agreement is structured, you either have to be really, really good or you want to be really, really bad. And it's uncharted territory because we've never been in a case where we've wanted to be really, really bad. Unfortunately, right now, that's what they want to be, whether they want to admit it or not. And it's time to embrace that.
And you know what, Jordan, actually, you know, I'm going to get to whether it's just finally time to call a tank, and you provided a perfect segue. But before we get to that, here's the thing about Julius Randle. And look, I love the fact that Larry Nance Jr. has gotten out there and that he's in the rotation and as obviously, you know, continuing to develop with the minutes. I still don't understand why, you know, why he would be starting over Julius Randle at this point. If you know what I mean? Like, the thought was, you know, bringing Randle off the bench in order to get more energy. I took a look at his numbers. Julius Randle has double-digit boards in 8 of the past 11 games with a high of 19 against the Wizards, but it also includes a 14-14 game off the bench in that win just last week against the Bucks. I think we've already, this is a guy that's proven that he's going to give you energy and going to give you effort. So I, you know, for the life of me, once again, and not to be redundant because I know that we talked about a little bit about this last week, I just don't understand that tactic and that, you know, that mindset. So this is what I'll bring to each of you guys. We've already seen both of these young guys, and I'm speaking of Julius Randle and I was going to say Jamarcus Russell. My goodness, please forgive me. Raiders fans out there already understand. D'Angelo Russell. We've already seen both of these guys kind of starting to get more and more vocal with the media after games, specifically in terms of expressing their disappointments or even disagreement with things. D'Angelo openly pointed to the offense as an issue, in particular when attempting to push tempo in order to get a run going. What is the answer here? You know, is it the long play? Is it Jordan's point that this is ultimately a tank, a silent tank, or really an out loud tank? And we're just going to have to just deal with this, and they're just going to have to kind of like just get in where they fit in and deal with their minutes kind of being messed with and their roles being messed with. Is there an answer to meet somewhere in the middle? What do you guys think? What's going to come?
Well, this is the interesting thing, Jabari. The minutes, these guys can play 30, 35 minutes a night, and the results are going to be the same. Like, it's not like if these guys play more minutes, the results will change. The results really don't mean much. Like Jordan mentioned earlier, it's almost like a silent tank in a sense because the team just isn't that good enough right now. But you want your guys to play as many minutes as possible. So that's the point where it's kind of mind-boggling to most of the fans and even media members as well. Like, why are you guys, that's what these guys miss. It's not like it's going to affect the win or loss column that much. And you really need to get these guys out there playing. So it's really mind-boggling what's really going on. But also, there was a stretch of games where both Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell got it. It seemed like they start clicking. They start clicking on the court. They felt really comfortable on the court, and they both start playing very well. And then the next day, they come out of the lineup. So, yeah, whenever you go through that, you know, when you play well and you're not rewarded for it, you're almost, you know, you're actually put on punishment for it. It doesn't make sense. So then, yeah, and you're playing at a high level. You're playing having good games and putting up good numbers, yeah, they have a right to actually be in the media saying, hey, I don't know what's going on. You know, this is what should be going on. Yeah, I agree with what's going on with the players because there's not a whole lot of things that are making sense right now. And that's not good for an organization. It's not good for young players. When you have young players, you want them to be on the same page. You want them to be on a program to the point where we look back 2-3 years from now, we look back, okay, when they're rookies, this is why they're at this point now because they're on a certain program that had them on a trajectory level to being a certain type of player. And right now, I don't think the organization has that for these young guys.
Yes, I mean, okay, we're talking about D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle being more vocal with the media. Let me go back to the Oklahoma City game where Byron Scott calls them scared. Now, it is the cool thing.
And pathetic.
It is the right thing and pathetic. And you know what? It is the cool thing and the right thing at this point in time, it seems like, to put down Byron Scott and applaud these young guys for speaking out against him because fans have so much animosity and so much frustration built up that when somebody does it, especially somebody that they want to see on the court giving production, like Russell, like Randle, we tend to back them. Look, you can call it scared. You can call it pathetic. You can call it unenergetic. As Julius Randle said, they just didn't have the energy. You can call it whatever you want. Bottom line is the performance against Oklahoma City was pathetic. So as far as Randle and Russell come out speaking out, you know, saying, no, you know, we weren't scared. Well, you can call it whatever you want, Mr. Randle. You can call it whatever you want, Mr. Russell. Bottom line is you suffered the 6th worst loss in franchise history. That performance was any was everything, including pathetic. Yes, you looked a little timid out there. You were destroyed by a team that's elite right now. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Byron Scott, maybe this is his way of, you know, Phil Jackson has the real knack for motivating his players. And I don't know if maybe this is Byron Scott's attempt at doing that. It doesn't work if that's the case. But you know what I mean. You know, Phil had the way of playing with words in the media that could motivate his players. And I don't know if Byron Scott is trying to do that. But look, I don't have a problem with what Byron Scott said at the end of the Oklahoma City game, because if you watch that contest, it was pathetic. And like I said, it is the sixth worst loss in franchise history. So it would appear that they were at least a little scared, a little timid, right? They went into that game knowing that they had no chance. They played very uninspired basketball. So I'm definitely not going to go against Byron Scott with what he said following that contest. The war of words is going to continue. I mean, we still have plus 50 games left in the season, right? I mean, 50 games left in the season. So it's going to continue to happen. We're going to continue to see the war of words. I do believe it is the downfall of Byron Scott. We know that it's going to be his last year. And at some point in time, when we get to that 70-game mark, if things continue to keep on keeping the way they are right now, there's going to be a mutiny formed against Byron Scott, if there isn't one already. Okay, the fans already can't stand the guy, and they want him gone. But look, the players are eventually going to form a mutiny. And at the end of the day, if you look at Kobe Bryant, it's very simple for Kobe to say, look, this isn't my circus anymore. I'm out of here. When the 82-game mark hits, he's out of here. You know, so it's with the young guys right now, the way they handle it. It's up to them for them to show their poise. I don't have any problem with what Byron Scott said following the OKC game. You know, we can nitpick at Byron Scott, and there are a lot of reasons to criticize this guy. But at certain times, he has said things that have been correct. We're just so frustrated with the situation and some of his decisions that we instantly want to go against him.
You know, that all of that is an excellent point, and I'm going to give Jameson an opportunity to respond to it. But the one thing I'll say is this: you're exactly right. It's very easy to ride the wave, you know, like of frustration. You know, and shout out to the folks on Twitter. You know, we definitely appreciate all of your interaction. Remember, I'm Jabari Davis NBA on Twitter. Jameson is the Jameson. Jordan can be found at Jordan_DTS. You know, I kind of went back and forth. I'm not sure if you guys saw it the other night. I went back and forth because I was actually complimenting, you know, the young guys and how they've, you know, like, in my opinion, responded well, positively, you know, like, you know, prior to this last game, of course, you know, to some of the back and forth and the jerking around with their minutes. But, you know, to your point, Jordan, you're right. You know, sometimes that wave, you know, is crazy because as soon as I mentioned it, I got attacked left and right by Lakers fans. Like, because I apparently it sounded too much like I was praising Byron Scott, when in actuality I was praising the young players for being able to deal with some of those circumstances. Jameson, again, I told you I said I would, you know, give you an opportunity to respond. What about the thought of this? Yes, Byron Scott is exactly, you know, it was exactly right in the fact that it was pathetic, and Jordan's right about that. But what about the thought that, hey, Byron, you're in charge of these guys. You're in charge of a team that went out there and gave a pathetic effort. You're in charge of a team that goes out there and gives up routinely 100, 110, 120 plus points per game. You're a guy that's been known as a defensive-minded, defensive-oriented guy. You've always been able to get your teams to play hard. So if in fact they did play pathetic, if in fact they did look like they were scared, or like a deer in headlights, what about the idea that maybe that's a reflection of you and your lack of ability to inspire these guys?
That's exactly correct. There was a situation where, way back when, where, you know, Charles Woodson of the Raiders, since we're talking about Raiders in this episode, said of Bill Callahan, you know, Bill Callahan said he had the worst team in America. Well, Charles Woodson the next day called him the worst coach in America. And whenever you call your team out, you're pretty much saying that you're doing whatever name you're calling them, you're pretty much calling yourself that name as well. Because it doesn't really make sense, in my opinion, when I look at the stuff that's going on. When I look at the team, I look at the roster, this roster doesn't need to be called out. Not when you have the inexperience they have, not when you have the roster they have. They're just, it's one thing if they had a playoff roster. Like, if they had a roster of a top 16, they got blown out by 40, then yeah, you can say that. But when you have a roster that just isn't that good, then yeah, like, these things are fortunately going to happen. When you got a motivated team at home that's kind of playing well right now, that's a top five, you know, team in the country, or in the country, in the league, then yeah, these things are going to happen. I really do think that a lot of things need to get checked. And a big part of it is, what's the coach, the coaching, and the front office? What are they trying to do here? It seems like the front office is trying to go the young route. They're trying to develop these young guys. That's the goal. seems like the coach is trying to win as many games as possible, no matter how you have to do it. And that's a huge disconnect. And if you're not on the same page, it can really set your franchise back. And it would not surprise me if they were to make a move sooner than later at the coaching position if this doesn't improve.
Let me jump in here because I honestly, Jameson, I kind of had to disconnect with what you just said because honestly, you said we already know this roster isn't good. So let me make sure I understand this. You said we already know this roster isn't good. There's no reason for Byron Scott to come out and say that, correct?
It's not going to say that they're pathetic because when you're
but
saying
they are.
That.
But they are. But they are pathetic. I mean, we always sit here, especially in media, when we go to post-game conferences, a lot of the times coaches get criticized for bouncing around questions and not answering it with truth. When you get beat and you suffer a loss the way they suffered a loss in OKC, I don't want to hear a rah-rah statement. It's frustrating from a coach's standpoint for somebody who is really fighting for their job to get paid. I mean, they're fighting for their money at this point in time, and we understand that Byron Scott probably won't be back next season. And at the end of the day, if you're in a professional sport, you have to have that competitive edge. At the end of the day, that performance was pathetic. There's no other way around that. I don't necessarily have a problem with Byron Scott stepping up and saying that this team is pathetic because they're playing pathetic. They played pathetic against OKC. They've had several instances where they're pathetic. I would have a problem with that if we're talking college sports because those are amateurs. But at the end of the day, these guys are getting paid to play the game of basketball, regardless if the roster is good or not. The roster is bad, and we know the roster is bad. I don't have a problem with a coach calling guys that are making millions of dollars playing professional sports pathetic when that's what the performance was. College is different. I don't have a problem with it in the pros. I just don't.
Do you have a problem if a player said that his coaching was pathetic? Would you have a problem with that?
That's what it is. I mean, absolutely not. You know, the old saying goes, though, and this is true in every case, and you guys know this, and those listening to this podcast know this. The old saying goes, players win, coaches lose. Does it not? I mean, is that not the saying that we have lived by in professional sports for the last three decades? And that's what you have to keep in mind. You are what you are. You are what your record says you are. Bill Parcells once said that, and there's no truer statement to that. John Wooden also said, I believe the quote was, the team with the best players will win 90% of the time. We don't have the best players. We don't have the best coach. Right now, the front office seems to have some sort of an identity crisis. There's a problem from the top all the way to the bottom. In this particular case, I don't have a problem with Byron Scott calling that performance against OKC pathetic, though. I have no problem with that whatsoever because there are only five other times in this franchise's history where they were worse.
You know, honestly, what's funny about this is I don't think we're disagreeing with each other, but here's the issue that we have. Neither one of us have an issue, I think, with Byron's opinion. My thing is like sometimes you also have to self-assess, and if you are responsible for ending or for not, for making that not the case with your team, I think what I would have liked to have heard, and again, this is nitpicking, you're 100% right, but what I would have liked to have heard, especially when you're dealing with young players, especially when you're dealing with guys that are simply trying to figure it out at this point, that have been jerked around back and forth, in and out of the lineup with awkward rotations and all of that, especially when you're dealing with that, I would have liked to have seen him say, hey, we all stunk today. We were all pathetic because, quite frankly, it was not just an effort thing. It was not just a matter of being caught in the headlights. It was a matter of they didn't look prepared. They didn't look, they didn't look as though they were, were given the opportunity to make any of the right adjustments. I'm sorry. That was a you were exactly right, Jordan. Top to bottom, they stunk. Top to bottom, they look like they're pathetic. And if you're dealing with young players, I just would like to see you not throw them under the bus just blatantly like that. And if you're going to throw yourself under there as well and back it up twice because you are just as responsible if you are this coaching staff. All right, we won't beat a dead horse, but you also brought up something else that was good, and we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier when we were discussing Mitch's comments. What do you guys think about this approach? It's taking the approach of kind of like, looking for free agency once again next summer to make the big move. Is that the right move for this franchise? Or do they need to really focus on the development of these young players for another year prior to that?
Well, I mean, you have to do it with what you can control. And right now, Lakers can control their young players. The young guys they have under contract, and especially with the way the collective bargaining agreement is right now, whenever you have a young guy, you want to keep them for 7 years. You can develop them. You have them under your control for 7 years. So you want to develop them and get them to as best as they can possibly be and hopefully build a young core and nucleus going forward that can be a contender in a couple of years. That's the goal, and that's what you have control over. You have no control over anything else, not over free agents, not over anything else but the young guys you draft. So if that's the case, then you develop those guys. So it is correct, because the last few years in free agency and in the summer, it hasn't been too kind. It just has not. It hasn't been a situation where, hey, you know, they've come out winners. It's become a situation where each summer it's gotten worse and worse ever since the summer of Dwight, summer after that, this past summer. It's been all bad. So you have to assess and look back at things and say, you know what, we don't have control over free agents, where they go, especially how the new CBA is. But what we do have control over is these young guys that we've drafted and acquired. Let's take a look here and see what we can do with them.
You know, as far as free agency goes, and let's think, because I'm going off the top of my head here with no notes in front of me. Let's look at free agent history with this franchise. Outside of retaining our own free agents, when was the last time the Lakers reeled in the big fish? I'm thinking Shaq back in 1996. That's back in 1996.
Yep.
That's a long time. Most of the rebuild process within this organization has happened through trade. Now, we haven't seen any blockbuster mm-hmm. trades the last 2 to 3 years because, quite frankly, haven't had the assets to make a big trade. If you honestly believe that Lightning is going to strike twice within the same decade, the same 10-year span as the Pau Gasol deal, completely different CBA now, completely different mindset of teams. You want to be bad or you want to be really good. There's no in-between with this collective bargaining agreement. It's just not set up that way. So you have to have assets to make big trades. Free agent history doesn't necessarily state that the Lakers have been successful in going out and reeling in big free agents. Now, with all that being said, I can't recall the last time the organization was in a situation that they're in right now, and there is about to become we're about to see a huge spike in the salary cap. That may play into their favor. Also, I can't recall the last time the team was looking for a true go-to star. It's been a long time. The glitz and the glamour of the Los Angeles Lakers organization and playing in Los Angeles is going to be very appealing to someone at some point in time. I do believe they will land a free agent within the next 2 to 3 years, somebody that wants to be responsible for reviving this franchise. I'm not even going to throw out names. I don't even want to speculate on who it may be, but I do think it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, it's going to take another 2 years before you actually have the assets to pull in a big trade, because I don't see anybody out there on the open market right now or on the market that could turn this franchise around right now with a trade. I don't see any team willing to trade a player like that. So it'd have to come out completely out of left field. I don't see it happening. If you want to turn this franchise around in a hurry, by in a hurry, I'm talking the next 3 years, you've got to strike gold in one of the next two free agency periods. One of the next two. There are a lot of options out there in the next two seasons, and you have a lot of money at your disposal. And it's been a long time since the franchise can say that they've had that. Like I said, without being redundant, it's also the first time in a very long time that this franchise has been looking for a go-to star. So all in all, it's a different situation, a different set of circumstances. You have to play to win. I mean, every season it's a reset button, right? Every offseason you hit the reset button. You have to play to win. It's going to happen, I believe, in free agency eventually, but in the next 2 to 3 years, you'll regain the assets that you've traded in hopes of making a championship run in 2012, 2013, 2000, when it didn't necessarily happen. You're about to regain those assets and be fully loaded, and that's when I expect for them to be serious players in the trade game.
You know, honestly, that's an excellent point, and you're exactly right, which is particularly why I want to go ahead and develop those assets that they do have. I just worry that we're continuing to kind of put all of our hopes and I guess proverbial eggs in that one free agency basket. When it kind of to both of your points, but obviously to James's point earlier, you got to deal with what you got in hand prior to trying to look outward. All right, let's actually, before we go into a quick break, let's actually talk about one of those assets in particular that Jordan, you just mentioned. Jordan Clarkson's game has been one that has been interesting this year to me. He's averaging right around 15 points, 3.5 boards, and a couple assists per game. He's clearly developing, has developed and continues to develop as an all-around offensive player, from his mid-range game, that looks very solid. He's also significantly improved as a three-point shooter, both off the catch and the dribble, which is obviously ideal, but part of me worries that he's kind of caught in between that time. He's caught in between that developing group as well as that veteran lineup that appears to be centered around, basically a desire to eventually get something for a Lou Williams and Roy Hibbert or even a Nick Young, on the trade market. What do you guys think about his play? Like, have you also noticed that he kind of gets lost out there at times because he's kind of in limbo?
Well, I think the biggest problem is this. I believe when I look at the young guy, especially a guy like Jordan Clarkson, he's a guy that's trying to figure out what's going on the court because there's really no set offense. You know, that's one thing is there's no set, you know, system that you're in that is what you do when you're here or there. You're kind of just really improvising on the fly a lot of the cases. So you're going to see flashes where, yes, he looks very good. You're going to see flashes where he does look lost out there. And also remember, he is still a second-year player. He's a good second-year player, especially for where they got him at and how much he's making. But he's still a second-year player that's trying to figure out everything. And also, there's a lot of moving pieces. When you have lineup changes, lineup inconsistencies, one day you're starting at the point, the next you're playing the two. You know, and there's so many different inconsistencies. Yeah, you're going to have guys get lost. So it's expected, but the key is that we're seeing growth. We're seeing growth from year to year, game to game, week to week with this guy. And that's the key. That's the key. We're seeing a better Jordan Clarkson this year than we did last year. So that's the key thing. Plus, going forward, I think with him, you kind of want to settle on a position with him. I don't know if you want to keep on messing with him and say, oh, he's a point guard today, he's a two tomorrow. You want to give him a position to let him, you know, expand and grow that way. I think that'd be the best fit for him and also for the team.
Jordan, that's actually where I was going to go with this. So thank you for that, James. That's actually where I was going to go with you. Is it, you know, like, is he, are we going to eventually look for him to play in the same backcourt as D'Angelo Russell? What is the ultimate answer there? Because I agree with Jameson. At a certain point, while it's great to have them be able to be interchangeable, I think that it would help both of their developments if they settled in at a certain position. What do you think about that?
I couldn't agree more. I definitely couldn't agree more. The problem with that is, and it has to go back to the coaching, this is the problem here. We know that Byron Scott is not the longtime coach, and we've mentioned candidates that could grow with this team. So to me, the vision moving forward is unclear because I don't know what the future holds at that position. I don't know what type of style we're going to be seeing these young guys playing in the future. It's not going to be the style right now. A lot of that matters. A lot of that matters. So until we peg a guy that controls the bench and controls the sidelines as the long-term approach for this team, it's really tough to say. That's a vague answer, but, I mean, it's honestly the truth. This is a team that is struggling right now. Not struggling. They don't have an identity. They just don't have an identity. If you look at a team like Minnesota, for instance, that's a team with a lot of young pieces. Each member on that team knows what their role is going to be. It's almost solidified for the next 3 to 4 years. That's not the case with this team because we don't know what the future holds on the bench.
You know, that's basically a perfect point. Everything is still up in the air. We're essentially, and I'm going to, you know, name drop here, you know, Jameson, a friend of yours, you know, the photographer Cassie Athena?
That's correct.
Yeah, all right. So, you know that I guess it's a Nick, you know, it's from a video of hers, but it's been immortalized, the Nick Young with the question marks over his head. Or beside his head. That's essentially all of Lakers Nation at this point, and it truly looks like that's the same face that the players have out there. So many question marks, so many unanswered questions about the direction. So it may just be one of those cases where we're going to have to buckle up and just, you know, I don't want to necessarily say enjoy this ride, but just get through the ride, you know, for the rest of this year. Until they go ahead and make a change. And that's not necessarily guaranteed that they're going to make a change in this offseason. It would just appear that's in the cards. All right, so let's take a quick break for Lakers Nation podcast spotlight. But when we come back, we'll jump into this week's LakersNation.com roundtable question.
My name is Serena Winters, and this is my Lakers Nation spotlight. I have been with the website since 2012. I have supported the game of basketball since I can remember. Basketball was the first sport I played, so I've always supported it. And the Lakers are the first team that I can remember supporting, specifically from my grandma and grandpa. They were big Lakers fans, so I would watch the games with them. I don't currently have a favorite song. It 100% depends on my mood, but I can tell you that the last song that I can remember playing over and over in my car was a song called You Know You Like It by DJ Snake and Aluna George, and pretty much anything Fetty Wap right now, but I'm sure I'll get out of that phase pretty soon. My favorite all-time musician, singer, band, again, it completely depends on my mood, but I can tell you that when I was in high school and college, I had a Sublime poster on my room, and that thing traveled with me for over 8 years. So I was a big Sublime fan as a kid. That was the first CD I can remember buying. My favorite thing or place to eat in LA, let's see, my favorite thing in LA has to be Staples Center. That's near and dear to my heart, and plus since I work there all the time, I feel like it's my second home. And my favorite thing to do in LA is go to brand new restaurants that I've never been to. So the last one I went to a few weeks ago was Scarpetta in the Montage, and that was absolutely delicious. My favorite NBA player to watch growing up was Kobe Bryant, and my favorite all-time Laker is Derek Fisher. It's great to be a part of Lakers Nation. I feel very fortunate that I get to connect with the fan base and provide fans an information source and news about the Lakers. It's something that if you asked me when I was 17 years old what I wanted to be doing, this is it. So I feel very fortunate. My favorite Kobe Bryant moment is when he knocked down 2 free throws with a torn Achilles, because it just shows what type of athlete Kobe is, shows his mentality, his give everything he has. There's no other player in the NBA to have ever done that, and it also makes me laugh when I think of Paul Pierce being rolled out on a wheelchair after growing up a Lakers fan.
Welcome back to your Lakers Nation podcast. Jabari Davis, Jameson Walsh, and Jordan Buscarini back here with you to close things out. Let's go ahead and get into this week's LakersNation.com roundtable question, of course, generated each time by the site's Corey Hansford. This week, Corey asks us to discuss whether Roy Hibbert is playing as well as we could have expected, or if some of us would have liked to have seen more from the 7-2 big man in what is essentially a contract year. My thought, and I'll come to you guys, but my quick thought on it was that while he certainly can't be expected to make up for what is clearly one of the league's worst defenses, I guess, I would like to have thought that a guy that was consistently in the top 5 in many key defensive categories, and also a one-time runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year, that he might have made slightly more of an impact in terms of just galvanizing guys on that end of the floor. What do you guys think of Hibbert's play this season?
It started out okay. Like, it started out cool. Like, it started out like it did in the preseason. It's kind of tailed off a bit. I mean, but at the same time, you know what you're getting. It depends on your expectations. I didn't have a whole lot of high expectations for Roy Hibbert. It seems like he has not been the same since a couple years ago when they were in the conference finals and he was an all-star player. Just hasn't been the same kind of guy mentally. He shows flashes and whatnot. He's a defensive center that's very limited offensive game. The only issue I have with him is if you're 7-2, you got to get some more rebounds. You have to. There's too many games where he's having under 5 rebounds in a game. There's way too many of those kind of games going on, and there's a lot of missed shots going on. It's not like he's taking the ball out from behind the basket. There's a lot of missed shots out there. So, there's a reason why he was an afterthought in Indiana, and they drafted a guy in the lottery to replace him. There's a reason why they let him go pretty much for nothing. So, my expectations weren't high, but at the same time, I think he could be a little bit better. But he is who he is. He's a guy that you could possibly move up the deadline to a team that needs some front court depth. I mean, it seems like a lot of teams are going small, but you never know what may happen between now and the deadline. He's the guy that they may be able to move and just go small for us. I mean, you have guys like Tarik Black and Larry Drew. Oh, Larry Drew. Run that back.
No, you're good.
Drew. Larry Nance Jr. You can play small ball 5 because, if at least those two guys are going to give you hustle and they're going to give you energy. They're going to be able to defend. Yes, they're undersized, but they can do a lot of the things that most centers are doing in the league anyways. Roy Hibbert's a guy that's making some money. And also, I just don't see where he fits in on this situation. A team like this that's kind of definitely rebuilding and kind of trying to figure things out, he doesn't really fit in. He can help another team out. He can come off someone else's bench or, be a defensive anchor for a different team that's a piece or two away. He can definitely help. He really can't help the Lakers. So his strengths aren't getting magnified on this ball club.
I think we discussed Roy Hibbert just a couple of weeks ago. And, sometimes I'm kind of on the fence on this, and I'll give you a couple of reasons why. His numbers are consistent with his career averages this season. Now, typically, you'll see players, especially in contract years. I love what Sparky Anderson once said. He said, you give me 9 players in a contract year, I'll give you a World Series. Typically, that's true in professional sports. You see guys in contract years play just a step above. But his numbers have been consistent with his career averages, maybe up a couple of percentage points in some regard, down a couple of percentage points in some other. So you would hope that maybe a guy like Hibbert, who's in a contract year and is making $15 million, would stand out, would have inflated numbers because he's playing on a poor team. We see that a lot, and there's a lot of players that, you know, people would have that debate. Okay, well, he's putting up, you know, player X is putting up, you know, XYZ numbers, and it's because he's playing on a team that's 10 games, you know, under 500. They're inflated numbers.
Well, when you take a look at the analytics side of basketball, and I don't know how you guys feel on analytics, and I know that that's getting way off of the topic here. I think there's a fine line between analytics and eye test. The idea that independent research has actually shown that regardless of what a player has done 10 times, we'll use free throws here for an example, regardless of what the player has done his last 10 shots have no direct impact on what is going to come on his 11th shot. Basically what it's saying is that players, individual games are small sample sizes. The course of an 82-game season, that's where the average comes from. So there's really no hot and cold streak. That's basically what the analytic process in some regard states based off independent research. But that being said, Roy Hibbert has been really consistent with what he's done his entire career, which leads me to believe that he is what he is at this point in time. And as far as the development goes, we're past that stage. He's past that age. Roy Hibbert has hit that ceiling, and he is what he is. And that's an above-average basketball player in the NBA who could be, you know, could be the missing piece for a team that's contending. I don't think he's going to elevate a team that is not in contention. That's my take on Roy Hibbert. That's not a knock on Roy Hibbert. He is what he is at this point in time. He's around his career, and we've gotten what we've gotten what I expected to get out of Roy Hibbert, put it that way.
No, that's entirely fair, and you're right. He is right around his numbers. Admittedly, while I didn't expect, I didn't expect vintage Wilt or even, you know, numbers that would rival, I guess, Bynum's best season from a few years back. But I did think, you know, like to Jameson's point, I did think we'd get at least, you know, somewhere around double-digit rebounds simply from an effort standpoint and maybe even a few blocks per game because it was a contract year. In terms of overall development, you're not going to see much more than, you know, like the turnaround hook and, you know, like a putback here and there. And, you know, and actually when he takes it consistently, his mid-range shot, his square-up shot is pretty good. But you're not going to see much more out of that. I don't know. You know, maybe I just anticipated a little bit more because of the contract year. But, you know, that's not a knock against Hibbert. You're exactly right. He is, you know, he is what he is, and he is playing, to what I guess, you know, from an average perspective, you know, should have been expected. All right, that was Corey Hansford Roundtable Question of the Week, and we definitely appreciate those each time around. But before we get out of here, let me get some final shots from you guys.
All right, final shot. You know, basically what's going on is Christmas Day, it's always a traditional game and whatnot. And for the Lakers fans, we all know historically we do not play well on Christmas Day. Just historically. It's one of those things where it just doesn't end well no matter if we have a team that's winning 65 games or a team that's winning 25 games. It just doesn't go well. This upcoming week, by the Clippers on Christmas night, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I would temper expectations. And if you're going to be at home or with family members that are Clipper fans, be very, 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 very careful because it might get ugly for us. Christmas is just not a good situation for us. And going into this game, we're all hoping for the best, but at the same time, got to be honest, got to be realistic. The Clippers somehow or another love to play their best game against us. So, you know, just temper expectations on Christmas. Keep the trash talking to a minimum because it may not be in our favor.
Hey, and that's a great point. You know, and what it really is even though the Clippers haven't looked great this year, and you know, they certainly have their, you know, their issues to overcome over the course of the season if they're going to be anything anywhere near a contender, you know, like was which was anticipated prior to the season. It's the little brother syndrome. So anytime they have the opportunity to play the Lakers, they're going to run it up, and those shots that don't necessarily fall, you know, in other games, they're going to fall. It's going to happen. But you make an excellent point. We don't need anybody, being called out and driving it to Temecula or any of that stuff. You know, shout out to James Hollis, he was on just last week, and we certainly don't need everybody's Christmas being ruined or, you know, holiday season, you know, depending upon what you celebrate, being ruined over a basketball game. So yeah, no, I fully agree. Jordan, what's your final shot?
I'll change up my final shot. I'm going to piggyback off of what Jameson just happened to say. Comparing the Lakers and the Clippers, one team understands the championships aren't won within the regular season. The other one doesn't really understand that. I think they believe the championships can be won in the regular season. It's one of those deals where you've had a team that's been so mediocre and so bad traditionally for so long that anytime they get a chance to poke the other guy, they're going to do so. And at the end of the day, one thing for Laker fans to remember, just blow it off, because look, this Clipper team's not going to win an NBA championship. And if you are a Los Angeles Laker fan, I'm sure you laugh at the fact that at some point in time, come April going into May, a Doc Rivers-led Los Angeles Clipper team is going to walk off the court after being eliminated in a seven-game series, probably within a five-game set. So there's no reason to let any of the trash talk get you. The bottom line is the Clippers are better. But better when we look at the expectation, again, going back to the CBA and looking at who the Clippers actually have on this roster, not a championship team. So if they want to hang their hat on knocking off the Los Angeles Lakers on Christmas Day, by all means, go ahead, hang your hat on it. At the end of the day, you're not going to win an NBA championship, and that's what we all play for.
Pretty much, unless you can put up a banner that says, you know, we beat the Lakers by 40 on Christmas on a random, you know, on a random, you know, December night, you know, not much is going to come of that.
Jabari, they may do that. We may see a banner placed over one of the championship banners because, you know, Doc doesn't like looking at those. They may put something over the top of one of those that says victory over the Lakers on December 25th, and that's okay. That's okay. Let them do it.
go ahead and enjoy that. Go ahead and enjoy that. All right, folks, we always appreciate you listening. Like I mentioned earlier, we appreciate all of the interaction on Twitter, whether you agree with us or not. You know, I'm of the opinion that, you know, this fan base is the best, you know, the best around. You know, that there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some of us that make us look a little bit better than others at times, but at the end of the day, I do appreciate and understand everyone's passion. We just try to offer a little bit of perspective, or at least our opinions on it. So thanks again for listening. You know, for Jameson Wilson, Jordan Buscarini, this has once again been your Lakers Nation podcast. We hope to have you back next week.